As Santa prepares his sleigh and sleigh team, and we seek to improve our 2018, we may want relief from weather that's frosty. May I suggest you try Spark Plug Coffee? I'm fine, you think, as you put on the kettle. But why, oh why, are you willing to settle for a merely okay cup of coffee that's loaded with stale coffee beans when you could have fresh roasted? So get out your brewer, your frother, and grinder, but next time you're shopping, here's a reminder. Great coffee can come straight to your location. SparkPlugCoffee.com is your destination. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, Spark Plug starts with premium Arabica beans that have been directly sourced and fairly traded. They offer blends and roasts to suit any taste, including decaf and half calf. But the best part is that this delicious coffee is delivered down your chimney within a week of custom roasting it here in Toronto so that it's always fresh and at its peak flavor. Spark Plug even offers autopilot, set it, and forget it deliveries that you'll never run out of fresh coffee again. And right now, Spark Plug is offering a special deal to Top 100 listeners. If you use the promo code TOP100PROJECT, all one word, at checkout, Spark Plug will give you 10% off any coffee order. The offer doesn't apply to any of the great gear they carry, but it does apply to any size order, and you don't need to be a new customer to take advantage of it. So what are you waiting for? The time has never been better to start making the best cup of coffee you've ever had in your own kitchen. Desperate to get started? Don't worry, stay calm, and plug yourself in at sparkplugcoffee.com.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Project.
And action.
Merry December 25th, movie nerds, and thanks for wasting a perfectly good holiday listening to us. Normally we cover classic movies, but today we're going to cover a classic TV movie. And we'll talk about it from its nose to its toes, so spoilers are definitely coming. I'm Ryan Ellis, here's my co-hosting wife, Bev.
That's me.
The coming attractions trivia for this week's choice: How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas. What's the TV or movie scene that best embodies the spirit of Christmas?
All kinds of scenes that come to mind that are strictly for nostalgia, like they embody Christmas for me. But if I want to be honest, the best embodiment I can honestly think of came in last week's movie about Miracle on 34th Street. I mean, that movie in general was such a beautiful expression.
So what was the scene, though?
Well, the scene would be the end, big climax, when they deliver all the mail and faith in Santa is restored, regardless of whether he's real or not, because that faith in magic is what makes Christmas magical, what makes it kind of the most special holiday.
Okay, fine choice. I'm not going to surprise anyone who knows me very well in saying It's Wonderful Life, and at the end, when all of George's friends pony up their dough. Unnecessarily, though, because Sam Wainwright is going to cover that money he owes, and then some, with his $25,000 loan.
See, I thought of It's a Wonderful Life because I think it's a really beautiful movie and I agree with you, but even though it takes place at Christmas, It's a Wonderful Life isn't the most Christmassy movie.
No, not.
Except that it takes place at Christmas and we always watch it at Christmas time. But even the end, those aren't Christmas gifts. That's more like having faith in humanity and isn't necessarily so connected to the holidays, so that's why I didn't pick that one.
But it's on Christmas.
Even A Christmas Carol. I don't think A Christmas Carol really embodies the spirit of Christmas. It's about somebody saving their soul at the last minute, but again, it's kind of irrelevant that it happens on Christmas Day.
All right, well, fair. I have some honorable mentions. Buddy's enthusiasm all throughout Elf.
Oh, God.
Except when he loses his faith towards the end, but otherwise. The Christmas Day scenes in A Christmas Story. You're not a fan of that one, but that's
no, definitely... but I thought of that. A Christmas Story, that's a Christmas that I find very familiar.
I feel it's like my family's kind of thing, too.
Yeah.
I've been there.
The most realistic, honest, and good-hearted portrayal of a Christmas morning.
And, of course, Grinch's redemption in this TV movie, or even the movie that Jim Carrey was in. All right, good choices, I think. The next 100 Project's 89th podcast, The Grinch, was first aired by CBS on December 18th, 1966. So long ago. Bev, I think people probably know this one, but explain it for them anyway with the skinny.
Yes, this definitely feels superfluous. But anyway, Boris Karloff narrates and provides the voice of the Grinch, a cantankerous loner who's so enraged by the joy his neighbors derive from Christmas that he seeks to ruin it for them by dressing up as Santa and robbing each of their houses of all the food, presents, and decorations.
Or in a nutshell, joyous crooning causes misanthropic dog abuser to return personal items he stole from neighbors. I like that he's redeemed, even though he stole those things for no good reason and was inches away from losing them all forever. The Rotten Tomatoes numbers on this TV movie, 100% of critics liked it, 22 fresh reviews, 0 rotten, and 88% of audiences, so 12% of people don't like this. I don't know anybody who doesn't. Everyone I've ever spoken to loves this thing. So what do you think of the Cat in the Hat presentation of the Grinch? I guess that book came before this came out. Obviously it did.
Yeah, I guess so. And that was one of the sequels. There was a sequel to it that involved the Cat in the Hat. Okay. Grinch and the Cat in the Hat get together to cause some mayhem. Of course, I'm coming to this with a sleigh full of nostalgia, so I love it. It's a classic for a good reason. The marriage of Dr. Seuss and Chuck Jones and Boris Karloff. It's pitch perfect. I am, however, bothered by the plight of poor put upon Max. Mm-hmm. Sometimes my sympathy for him honestly makes it hard to watch.
He's the best thing in it, I think.
Their relationship is crazy. It's like this total portrayal of an abusive relationship. And Max is so loyal and sweet through all of it when you kind of want him to run for his life and just go live with the Who's, who would certainly be nicer to him.
Well, I do have a question written here. How can you truly hate a guy who has a great dog like Max, but you can hate a guy who treats a dog like Max this badly?
He can't take credit for Max being as wonderful and sweet as he is.
He's against the odds.
Yeah.
He should be a terrible dog.
And for the record, Max's story was vastly extended. If you just read the book, it takes 12 minutes, so they had to pad it. Obviously, you can tell when you're watching it, there's lots of little vignettes of them messing with the sleigh or him like creating the costume, the songs, or takes up time. Chuck Jones called Max his favorite character in the story. He sees Max as the cipher for the audience.
Yeah.
I see him as like the only character that the Grinch needs to make things up to. Although, I mean, he has no regard for Max's safety or happiness whatsoever. No matter how many times I have seen this, watching Max almost get run over by this sleigh, actually literally getting run over by this sleigh, it stresses me out so bad. And even at the end when he saves Max from toppling over the side of the mountain, he's way more concerned about saving this sleigh loaded with Christmas stuff. Yet still, when he's freed, Max doesn't run away. He helps the Grinch save the sleigh. He's so guileless and sweet and completely at the Grinch's mercy. He's not even remotely evil like his master, but he's too loyal to contemplate escaping.
He's the strongest dog of all time to be able to move that sled even 1 inch when it's loaded with gifts, even at the beginning, but certainly when it's loaded with stuff.
Great animation of him digging his way to the bottom and then just inching at first and then finally getting a little momentum and making progress.
There's some excellent Chuck Jones touches with the animation on Max when he's on the back of the sleigh when he's not supposed to be, and that little wave thing he does. Or the, no one can see me doing this, but you put your hands up and you go, I don't know. Very Chuck Jones-esque. You can see a lot of the Warner Brothers, Looney Tunes, I should say, stuff, and some of the animations on him especially.
Even though it's a sloppier look about it, I've always kind of been more the Chuck Jones school of animation than the Disney school of animation. Listen, I love plenty of Disney stuff too, and a lot of my Christmas memories involve the shorts that they made with Chip and Dale. I love that stuff.
Okay.
In general, my preference has always veered more towards the wacky, irreverent Chuck Jones style of
animation.
Which
is more geared for adults, too, I think. This whole thing is a glorious example of storytelling economy. Unlike the 2000 remake, the Ron Howard one, which focuses on the Who's a lot, and the Who's are jerks. None of them, well, maybe Cindy Lou Who is likable, and Cindy Lou Who is the only one who actually speaks. Maybe don't count the singing, I guess, but she's the only one that speaks in this. There's only three actors credited in this: Boris Karloff, Thurl Ravenscroft, who didn't get credited right away. He's the one who sings the Mr. Grinch song, the mean one Mr. Grinch song. And then June Foray is briefly, she only has a couple lines of dialogue, the voice of Cindy Lou Who. And I say it's great storytelling economy, except as you pointed out, it was padded from the book. Well, certainly that was the case with things like the Hobbit movies. And I'm assuming, I don't remember this movie very well, but the Cat in the Hat that Mike Myers was in, I've never read any of the Dr. Seuss books, but I'm guessing that was really padded out.
But the difference is, they padded it with vignettes that were hilarious and fun. The Ron Howard Grinch, oh man, every time I think about it, it honestly makes me a little bit angry just how much they ruined the story by adding all these superfluous details about his origin story.
Yeah. And he was
like
bullied.
You say, the Who's are just terrible. Mm-hmm. And Cindy Lou Who, played by Taylor Momsen?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. Where Are You Christmas is a terrible song that can just go straight back to the pits of hell from whence it came. But even though she's supposed to be the most sympathetic character, she is this smug, sanctimonious, annoying character, and nobody in the whole world believes that a little girl is going to be like, really, guys, so many presents? Really, guys, isn't Christmas just about being together? No, kids go crazy for presents.
And the adults in that one are the ones who are obsessed with gifts. I actually basically liked that the first time I saw it in the theater in 2000. It won me over at the end, just like this one certainly wins you over. This one doesn't need to win you over, though. It's good all the way through.
Compliments, though, to Jim Carrey, who was a absolutely perfect Grinch. Yeah. There were things to like about it. Like, I remember enjoying parts of it, too. It was kind of one of those movies that, after the fact, the more I thought about it, the more angry it made me.
As for this one, the TV movie, Dr. Seuss didn't want to do the project, but Chuck Jones did convince him. According to Jones, everyone hates Christmas a little bit. I've always liked that quote. I read that on Salon in the review of the Jim Carrey, Ron Howard movie. And when you watch this version of The Grinch, I think that actually is borne out by The Grinch. It's not like he hates Christmas necessarily. He's just sick of it. He maybe would have liked it 50 years ago, but as he says in this, why, for 53 years I put up with this. Now, only now is he fed up.
Okay, but I think any of us can agree now more than ever in the last decade that Christmas is wonderful for the first few weeks, and the lights are pretty, and you hear the songs, and they make you happy, and all the decorations and everything's just so lovely. But now it starts so early that by the time December
25th, right, for Halloween, yeah.
Yeah, rolls around, I've had it up to here with Christmas. I do not need to hear Let It Snow one more time. I am over it by the time December 25th rolls around. And I'm so furious when I hear Christmas carols before New Year's and the week between.
Speaking of singing, Fahu Fores, the song that they sing more than once, because it is right off the top, and then it's obviously at the end. Fahu Fores, Dahu Dores. But then the noise, 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 the Grinch is talking about. How does he hear that up in his cave? I was playing Rock Band last night really loudly, and you couldn't really hear it on the street when you came home. So how does he hear their pantukas and Gendlers and Smendlers, where the hell it is?
Sound travels, I guess, in those mountains. You know, it echoes and comes up to him. Apparently, Dr. Seuss, who knew some Latin, worked some Latin into the lyrics of that nonsense song, and they are ultimately meaningless, but viewers, when they first saw the special, wrote into CBS and asked for translations. And speaking of Dr. Seuss and how you mentioned he didn't want to do it and he had to be convinced, he was anti-Hollywood. Part of what helped Chuck Jones convince him to do it was that they had worked together on some propaganda films during World War II.
Oh, so he knew him and trusted him. Seuss's book was adapted by Irv Spector and Bob Ogle, so I guess Seuss was just a producer. Yeah, he was a producer along with Jones, actually. Seuss was in his 60s when they did this. Old Ted Geisel. But back to the story and when the Grinch decides to steal the Who's stuff. This larceny is so important to him, he destroys his stylish red curtains. Although only one side, to make his shirt. I guess he had to cut more later. We only see him cut one side of those.
Cut one of each, and then you sew them together, mm-hmm. And then you have a coat.
But he only cut one that we witnessed. So he's the reverse Santa, and the Who's are on some great sleeping pills not to hear a guy steal everything in their house. I guess not the bedrooms, maybe logically, although he does take the kids' candy canes when they're actually sleeping with them and holding them. Ding, 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 he knocks them out of their hands. So you could argue they took every single thing in their houses, but he'd be well, he can't take the beds. They're laying in them. He can't take the sheets and the covers and the pillows.
But he does take even the very last crumb too small for a mouse.
So mostly they're implying it's the stuff that's not in the bedrooms, I guess.
As good sleepers as they are, Cindy Lou Who is awoken by a
Christmas ball rolling,
rolling in.
Well, luckily no Who stayed up late drinking and partying, or the jig would have been up. You mentioned the Christmas ball. There's a linking red theme in this. There's the strawberry that becomes the Grinch's eye because he has red eyes. And then the Christmas ball, of course. His outfit is red, and Cindy's hair ties are red.
His eyes, of course, turn blue.
Because he shuts them, and when he opens them, they're blue. And the sky changes as well when he opens his eyes. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more. But I noticed that when he goes to try to save the sled from going over the top of Mount Crumpet, they're red again. But they're also blue again later.
I think that's a mistake. I noticed that too, but I think that was just the animators made a mistake. There's lots of mistakes. Like I said, it's really rather sloppy. You see where the repeats happen, like where the looping of backgrounds and the same mistake will repeat over and over.
Oh, the Hanna-Barbera thing?
Paint pops off for a frame here, a frame there. I may have a slightly keener eye for this because when I started work, I worked on animated series for the first 4 years of my career, and you have to look for those things and fix them, right?
Oh, yeah, right.
But back in the 60s, it was far harder to do. Even though it was sloppy, that was a very expensive production. They spent over $300,000 on it, which was a very large budget at the time. I think it translates to like just over $2 million of today's dollars.
For a half-hour TV movie.
For a half-hour TV special, yeah. Mm.
So at the very end, they sing, but the angry lynch mob was probably forming to go out for their stuff. That's one of those deleted scenes, I think, that we didn't actually get to see.
No, they had the Christmas
We're happy
spirit.
Now!
They don't need the stuff.
Then we're going to get mad
happy,
later.
Have Christmas. They don't need the roast beast. The first character to get their roast beasts to eat is Max. Thank God.
He should be hungry from all the pulling of the sleigh he had to do.
That poor dog. I love him so much.
I know two people that call roast beef roast beasts, including my mom. So Boris Karloff is the voice of the Grinch. He worked for 50-plus years. He's best known, of course, for Frankenstein and some of the sequels. And a wealth of horror schlock. His resume is not that impressive. It's mostly Frankenstein and this, but he worked for so long. Thurl Ravenscroft was the singing voice of the Grinch. He was a voice in Pinocchio, 101 Dalmatians, and Mary Poppins, and a lot of other things, so pretty good resume for him. He's best known, though, for being Tony the Tiger in Frosted Flakes commercials. They're great!
Thurl Ravenscroft.
What a name.
What a great name. It's such a Harry Potter name, yeah, right? True. So when the special came out, everybody assumed that Boris Karloff was the singer of the song. Natural assumption. They both have very deep voices, but he couldn't sing. So that's why they got Ravenscroft to do it for him. And he was horrified that he got credit for it. He was, like, very vocal in interviews of saying, listen, that wasn't me singing. That was this guy, Thurl Ravenscroft, and he's amazing. Like, he deserves the credit.
And it took a while. We finally got credit later on. Not in 66, though. And then June Foray, the voice of Cindy Lou Who, was nearly 50 at this time. Interestingly, she's playing, what, a five-year-old or something? And she was a voice in Cinderella.
She's no more than two.
Oh, okay. Right, okay. And she was a voice in Cinderella, Peter Pan, and Roger Rabbit. And all the time sounding like a little girl, I guess.
Oh, she's the voice of Roger Rabbit.
No, in Roger Rabbit. She's a voice. She's not the voice of Roger Rabbit.
Oh, okay.
That's somebody else. She had 183 TV and movie credits and died just this past July. Was still working until only a few years ago. Chuck Jones had only directed shorts before this, so this was his first TV movie, I guess. And Ben Washam was his co-director. Jones won two Oscars. Did you know that?
No.
One for short subjects in the cartoon category, and he won an honorary award in 1996. 30 years after this came out, interestingly.
I'll tell you, animators worship him. Almost more so than Disney, because I think there was something so special and creative about his work that was unique to animation. Disney was very classical. They had a lot of goofiness, but Chuck Jones pushed that envelope. When the wolf saw the pretty girl, his eyes came all the way out of his head.
Auga.
Auga, you were right. He was the one that pushed it to that extreme level and helped define animation as an art that was unique.
The TV show is 1:3:3:1, of course. It was an aspect ratio of the TVs of the time. And our well-worn DVD was what we watched. I think I've watched it 6 or 8 times by this point, and 2 or 3 with you. The editors were Lovell Norman, and John Young. Norman and Young mostly did sound, ironically, in their careers, though not actually editing. John Young did sound effects on The Wild Bunch a few years after this, a polar opposite of this thing. Although, I guess there's an awful lot of dark stuff in this, like in The Wild Bunch, isn't there, until the very end when he's redeemed.
Animation is a really fun thing to do audio for because you really are creating it from scratch.
You have to.
And you can be really silly and creative with it, too. Mm.
The composer was Eugene Padani, whatever. He did only TV, including Horton Hears a Who in 1970, so the TV movie, not the one that came out in the mid-2000s with Jim Carrey, again, and Steve Carell involved in that. And Dr. Seuss wrote the lyrics to the songs. You're a rotter, Mr. Grinch. That is a Seuss thing.
And the music for that song in particular was composed by Albert Haig.
So the influence, there's quite a few remakes and many adaptations and homages and other works. And they're doing it again as a cartoon with Benedict Cumberbatch, old Ben Batch, as the voice of the Grinch. I think it's coming out next year, probably next Christmas,
you would hope. Yeah, 2018. I wonder what they're going to do to extend it to a full-length feature film. How they'll approach that, probably differently from the way Ron Howard approached it.
Maybe they'll keep it to about 80 minutes, but that's still almost an hour longer than this is. This gets right to the meat of it. He's mad at them, he makes the outfit, gets the sleigh, gets down to their place, and it must be 10 minutes. Or no more than 15, where he's stealing their stuff. All right, we should keep this short, because the TV show is short. What are your last thoughts on The Grinch Who Stole Christmas?
Just such a beautiful piece of work that's become totally woven into culture, and it's one of the most successful expressions of art, I think, that can be.
And it's a must-watch this time of year. It's one I almost always see, along with Wonderful Life. And at least the end scenes in A Christmas Carol, which we covered last year, and I remember saying in that podcast that I'm not going to watch the whole movie again, but I probably will watch the last 10 or so minutes when he wakes up and apologizes to everybody and makes it right. And because we record this before Christmas, I have to say in the future, I probably will have watched this by the time we get to when this podcast gets released. But yeah, I love The Grinch. And by the way, I said it wrong a few minutes ago for those anal people out there. It's How the Grinch Stole Christmas, not The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. So this will do it for the year for us. We're going to take next week off because it'll be New Year's Day. So let's talk a little bit about our year in podcasting. We did 44 podcasts. Kill Bill was the most popular download by quite a lot. The Movies We Hate podcast we released in, I think it was August, was number 2. It hasn't been passed by anything other than Kill Bill, which of course came before this whole year. Mulholland Drive and The Godfather, though, from previous years were big hits as well. They're in the top 10 last I looked in our stats, even though neither of them came out in the last year. My favorite movies we watched were Kill Bill, LA Confidential, Return of the Jedi, Sweet Smell of Success, which we had to cover and we did, Cool Hand Luke, Deliverance, and Adaptation. How about you? What are your favorite movies or favorite podcasts we did?
Well, Kill Bill, absolutely. That's just one of my all-time favorite movies. I really like covering some of the more recent movies like Babadook and Get Out. It was really fun to talk about those in particular. There was so much depth to them. And I really enjoy doing the Movies We Hate podcast. And I love that it was popular because I hope that we can do more podcasts like that.
The year in movies that actually came out in 2017, I like Blade Runner 2049 more for the artistic than for actually loving the film. I don't think I'm going to watch it repeatedly, but I got to see it again because it's such a treat for the eyes and the ears for that matter. Get Out, of course, was earlier this year, and we covered it in our podcast. Lady Bird, which I don't think is as good as everyone else says it is, but it's a good movie. Mother, which people seem to hate, but we liked it. I definitely will see that one again. Spider-Man Homecoming was a lot of fun. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. The performances are fantastic. The story's not the greatest, but if that movie is on best of lists or gets Oscar nominations, at least for the cast, I'm all on board with that. And then Wonder Woman was a lot of fun, too, and it's great to see a woman-directed movie and a woman star make a huge amount of money in what is going to be, I guess, the Year of the Woman. Not in movies, but in politics and in the world in general.
Yeah, you kind of said it all for me there. I think we'll get a little more in depth with this when we do our Oscar preview podcast, because that's certainly a better opportunity to talk about everything. And we'll have had a chance to see absolutely everything by then. My favorite movie of the year so far that I've seen, Get Out, hands down.
The comedy, according to the Golden Globes.
Whatever, but even 10 months later, it still feels just so fresh and real. Like, I loved it so much. And with you, I am fully defending Mother. I think it's a way better movie than everybody gave it credit for. And I'm going on record now and saying that 10 years from now, people will look back and consider it one of those underrated classics. That's a very bold statement to make, and I could be made quite a fool of. But God, come on, guys. That movie was, at the very least, 1,000% unique and highly entertaining. And I promise that none of you knew where it was going.
Neither did we.
Yeah.
And we saw it all alone in the VIP theater.
Right, we were the only people in the whole theater. We could just talk to each other in normal voices when we felt like it.
You mentioned about our Oscars preview podcast, which we'll do at the end of February. It'll be our third year in a row for that. And we'll do Oscar movies in February because it is Oscar month. It'll be the month of Bev in January. We'll talk about that in a few seconds. We'll, of course, cover horror movies in October. Basically the theme we've had the last few years. But it'll be the beginning of our third year of Next 100 Project movies after 3.5 it was, I guess, so 3.75 of a year of the Top 100 Project. We're soon going to pass the amount of time we spent on the original point of this podcast.
That was
going
to be my next question, is at this point, we must be getting close to covering more movies that didn't make the AFI's Top 100 list.
Well, this is the 89th podcast we've done, so no, we're not that close to 123 plus.
But
sometime next year we will be.
Our now playings or our not 100 projects that we did closer. During, so yeah. Mm-hmm. If we've done 240 podcasts at this point?
Give or take, not quite that many.
Okay, so we've got to be close, because there's 123 AFI movies.
Yeah, we're going to reach our five-year anniversary and 100 Next 100 Project podcasts around the same time in March, and I think into April next year. So we have anniversaries in two different cases. I guess we have to come up with another name. It can't be the Next 100 one. It's 101, 102, 103. Keep renaming ourselves. All right, well, that was The Grinch and the year in movies and a little preview of 2018. We're off next week because we'll be extraordinarily hungover on New Year's Day. When we air our first podcast of 2018, we'll feature the first selection in the third annual Month of Bev. Her first pick will be Chris Guest's riotous mockumentary, Best in Show. Dogs and comedy, Bev's two favorite things.
It's true.
I'm her third favorite thing.
Yeah.
It's true also. Yeah. The coming attraction trivia for Best in Show. Which dog should have won the contest? I'm going to say Max and the Grinch should have won the contest. But of the dogs in the movie, which one should have won?
Okay, so for the answer to that, please tune in.
More opinions.
In 2018 to our new year of podcasts for Best in Show. And if you just can't wait that long to hear from Ryan and me, check out our website, top100project.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the Top 100 Project on iTunes. You can check out our entire roster that we just referred to. Like we said, we've covered well over 200 movies now, including all 123 movies that made the AFI's 1998 and or 2007 lists of the best American movies ever made. Every episode is available for free. But while you're there, if you could rate us and review us, we would really appreciate that. If you'd like to reach Ryan and me, we're both on Twitter. I'm at Bev Ellis Ellis, and Ryan is at MovieFiend51, or you can reach us by email, top100projectpodcast@gmail.com. And once more, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Sparkplug Coffee. Don't forget that you can enjoy a one-time 10% discount on any coffee purchase if you use the code TOP100PROJECT. That's all one word, TOP100PROJECT, and it's not case sensitive.
You're a mean one, Mr. Bev.
And cut.
Happy New Year. Hey. Merry Christmas. All that stuff. Bye. See you in 2018.